From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Here we are back again on another Thursday evening for all your tabletop gaming goodness. It's The Dice Men Cometh, episode 104, on the 4th of February, 2016, and against a lot of popular demand, we've decided not to listen to those people who please told us never ever invite Trent back again.
What?
Because he's back.
Hello, yes.
Along with myself, Mark, and Garth.
Indeed.
Oh my God, this is like some kind of negative vortex of time suck. I'm back on the show.
I know. Isn't it great?
Here we are talking tabletop games. Mark.
We are. And Garth, what is coming up on the show today?
Well, we're going to start with talking about what we've been playing this week. We've each got something to say this time, so that'll be lovely. Trent's going to regale us with his well-researched news using both of his ass cheeks, which is a nice change. Yeah, we've missed that. I'm going to talk about some iOS updates as well, and then we're going to have a little bit of a discussion, a two-parter, one concerning Trent and one concerning an Australian game store.
Oh, my God, dear. This all sounds so terribly exciting.
It does all of those things and much, much more. But first, Trent, can I say, I have missed you like the rain.
I've missed these segues. I've particularly mixed that incredibly precise music cueing of yours, Mark.
Thank you, Claire Bowditch. She missed us like the rain as well here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, Australia's leaning tabletop gaming radio show and podcast.
That's true. We do lean quite a bit.
Do we ever. Gentlemen, now, we've all been playing various games this week. Garth, what have you been playing?
Well, I have been playing Leon's favourite ever two-player game, Summoner Wars. Now, we played the Master Set, which came out in 2011. The original set came out in 2009.
Have you played the sequel, Winter of Wars?
No, I've not. Ha 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 ha.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. See what you missed.
Things have not gotten better in my absence.
No, this is... Anyway. So this is designed by Kobe Dalch. Colby. And released by Plat Hat Games. And the great thing is, this game plays real quick. So you can get a good game of this within 30 minutes, which is awesome.
Now, it should be said, this is the game that brought Plaid Hat Games out into the public. This was their very first game. Mm-hmm. It went gangbusters. Not that it's unlike any other thing, but for some reason, it just went gangbusters. People loved it, and then they loved Plaid Hat Games. They have gone from strength to strength. Mm. Colby Dalch, he's one of the founders of the company. John Ariosa, one of the artists. I know he does a lot of art for their games. This one came out, 2009, and was nominated for quite a number of awards.
Yeah, it's won a lot of awards over the years with its original release and the Master Set release, which is great. It says it plays 2 to 4 players, but this is really a two-player game where you can play 4 if you want to share your monsters, but you don't really want to do that. Look, it's a fast-playing card game where each player takes on the role of a summoner. You are a powerful being who will harness the power of their mysterious summoning powers, whatever power that may be, because that all depends on which summoner you happen to be. You're trying to conquer the planet Etheria. Okay?
Yes.
Just remember that. Okay. You're trying to conquer that planet. But you do control all different kinds of magic on the battlefield, which is a 6x8 board where you'll be shuffling cards around to make your army as imposing as possible. You'll be able to freeze your opponents or drain their power or rain down fire from the heavens. You might even be able to raise the dead if you choose to. But what you really want to do in this game is you want to bring out your big baddies, your champions of your particular chosen race, for them to lay the smack down on the opponents, because this game is just a 1v1, my army versus your army, until your summoner is dead. It doesn't matter how many grunts you throw out there. As long as your summoner survives, you'll be surviving too.
And there's all different factions for this game. That right? You can buy expansions with new armies and stuff.
Exactly, and that's part of
different
what the Master
races.
Set... Yeah, this is what the Master Set brought out. It came with an original six races and then came out. I think currently there are up to 24 different races that you can be playing. Leon, being the kind of guy that Leon is, has them all, of course, which is great for us. And yeah, we sat down and played this a mere week ago when everyone else bailed after the show and decided they've got much more important things to do than play games and, in essence, do research for the show. So we sat down, had a nice drink, and played a couple of games. We played K2, which I like, and then we played Summoner Wars, which is fantastic. Now, the way this works is that you'll initially choose your race, which is obviously a deck of cards in the good style. Then you're going to have an initial starting setup. There's the same way for each race. The race has one of their cards in the deck is this is how your starting army will be. You'll have your summoner in this square. You'll have a wall here. You'll have all your little minions on there. And you might start with three or four of your various characters on the table. Yes, Mark?
And I was going to say, that's one of the differences with this, where it's a card-based game, but it actually has a physicality to it where you have spaces on the table you're moving. So it's not like your Magic where my bits are here, your bits are there, we're just playing cards. You're actually, your units move.
Yeah.
So it's almost, I guess you describe it as, it's like a miniatures game where instead of miniatures, you've got cards.
Yeah, it's a card minis game, basically.
Yeah, you've got the spaces they move, you've got physical structures in place.
Yep.
So it does provide that variety from something like Magic the Gathering to something with minis that would normally be a big setup time, your, 40K and those sort of things.
Yeah.
It's sort of, it's like a mishmash. It's like a meld of 40K and Magic in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right. And I like that because Leon was able to explain it to me, because I'm not the smartest guy, really quite quickly. All the cards made sense because every different soldier, character, grunt that you've got, it quite clearly explains on the card what their ability is, how many health they have, how many attacks they're going to be able to do. And as far as the rule set goes for how the game works, it's very, very simple because all you're going to do on the start of your turn is you're going to draw up to your hand limit of 5. Everyone has a deck. That deck you will only be able to go through once. If you happen to reach the bottom of that deck of cards, that's it. You've just got to play out the rest of the game with what's left. So once you've drawn up to 5, you then get to summon your monsters. Now, you'll summon them by using magic points that you would have earned during previous rounds, because every time you kill one of the enemy, they will go into your magic pile and they will then increase your magic points by 1.
Mm-hmm.
There will also be the last phase of your own turn where you have the choice to build magic, which is essentially discarding from your own hand to add to your own magic pile, and that's to be used for future summons. So after you've summoned, you might be able to summon a couple of grunts that might only cost you 1 or 2 magic points. You might try and save them up and summon a champion, which will cost 5 through to 6, 7, or 8 points, which is a lot of magic to save up. Once you've done that, you're going to be able to play event cards. Now, event cards might be free to play, or they might cost you magic points, and these will alter the game. They might, if your army has fewer characters than the opponent, you might be able to suck some of the magic from the opponent's team. You might be able to turn one of the enemy combatants to your side for a round.
Yeah.
So it offers a whole bunch of little quirks that'll make that particular round different. After you've done that, then you're doing your movement. Now, the movement's very, very easy because you can move 3 of your characters up to 2 spaces each. That's all. As I said, the board is an 8x6. So you've got 8 across and they're all the sideways, I guess, landscape format. And then you've got 6 up. So that's how you're going to be moving across. Then you start attacking. And you'll have cards that can do ranged attacks, or you've got cards that'll do melee attacks. You might have your champions or even your summoner who can do special abilities and might be able to attack from further afield or multiple characters or something like that. And then, as I say, the last thing is that build that magic. And any cards that you don't think are going to be useful, stick them in your magic pile and you'll be able to use them to at least start the next round with a bit more oomph when you summon some more monsters. It's really, really fun.
I haven't played this because I was under the assumption that it was just a sort of mindless money sink that sucks.
No.
But
no, it's not. And I guess the good thing is, which I'll get to in a little while, is that it comes in app form. So I did have a day off work today, and I was able to do a little bit of extra research and play with that because the app, which was free, comes with 16 different races that you can play.
Oh, so you don't get just like 4 and then you have to pay for the rest?
No.
Because Because I must admit that in the distant past, I owned an Apple device back in the days of the iPhone 4, I think it was, and I do remember I got this app and I actually played it. So I haven't played Summon Wars in the physical form, but I have played it in app form, as I said, probably over a couple of years ago. But I agree. It was simple to pick up. I can't remember whether you played it. I think you could only, back then you could only play against the AI. So I'm guessing you may be able to play against
other online and now. Offline. Yep, yeah. Definitely.
Look, this game brings a lot to the table in a little form, doesn't it? And there's now a couple of master sets where they've sort of reinvented.
Well, there's the master set. There's the master set, master alliances set, yeah. And then obviously there's a whole bunch of expansions to go along with that again. So it can be that money sink if you choose it to be. But when you just have six factions out of the initial box, or if you go to the app where you've got 16, there's a fair bit of replayability there if you're just trying to work out which faction is going to work best for me, or I'm just happy to go random and just try and have a decent fight, because you can play this game in an app in about 10 minutes, maybe. The real game would take under an hour, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the great thing is you're constantly involved. It's a two-player game, so there's never any downtime. The turns work really, really quickly, and there's going to be times where you just go, oh, damn you, for doing that. But then you'll be able to lay the smackdown on them just as quickly. In fact, that's what happened last time, because my special ability was I was able to wound my summoner and give him two wounds. He only had 5 health in the whole game. So twice I gave him 2 wounds, but that allowed me to bring out a champion who would normally cost 5 magic. So I was able to bring them both out. My summoner only had 1 hit point left, but when I brought out that hero, he was able to lay the smackdown on Leon's hero. Bang, dead. Game over. And Leon again said, oh, I'd never usually lose at this game. So look, I really recommend it. I can see why it's one of Leon's... No, it is his favourite two-player game.
Yeah.
It's a great fun. It's really quick to learn. It looks fantastic on the table when you've got the playmat and everything. So yeah, 2 thumbs up from me.
Fantastic. Well, look, we're going to come back in a minute, talk about more of the games we've been up to. But in the meantime, maybe I'm going to try and understand a bit how... You guys seem to play a lot of games, and I don't. I haven't been playing a lot of games. It's like I'm living in a different world.
Segway!
And there you go. That was Iron Maiden with A Different World, and it seemed like, for a moment, they went into a different world. Maybe that track had some more to play. I don't know. But it stopped all of a sudden. Anyway, you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Did we say that we're Australia's leading tabletop gaming radio show and podcast? Make sure you tell your friends about that.
Yeah, well...
Now, Trent?
Hello, yes.
What have you been playing lately?
Bugger all, to be honest.
Me too.
But I did manage to squeeze in the other Australia Day a little round of the End of the World RPG from Fantasy Flight, which I believe you talked about last week.
I did, yes.
I mean, we're in the same session, so I just wanted to add a couple more things to that.
Of course.
For anyone who heard that spot. This is, of course, Fantasy Flight's Apocalypse RPG, where you play as yourself. And I think this is one of the... I've been looking forward to this for ages since they announced it, because there's a zombie end of the world scenario. There's going to be the rise of the machines.
Yeah, alien invasion.
And maybe like a Cthulhu-type Elder God.
Yeah, there's 4 or 5 scenarios that'll be out.
I think this is one of those cases where the idea is just better than the execution. You know what I mean? Look, we enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah, we did.
I think.
However.
Yeah, this idea of playing as yourself and creating a character that is you includes the creation, includes the rolling up of your stats. And there's a process when you're creating that character where everybody else gets to vote on what your stats are. Now, you've got 6 stats each. When you put 4 or 5 people around a table, that takes a little while. And the novelty wears off pretty quickly.
Yes.
Although, I enjoy the fact that we were able to say to you, no, your physical prowess is not what you think
it
is.
Sure.
And yes, your charisma, Trent.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a bit better than you
think
it is.
There is something to all of that. But there's this mechanism in the character creation process where you're putting dice in these blind bags and drawing them out. Boring. We could just, you could achieve all of that by having somebody close their eyes. Okay. Yes. And it could just be a hell of a lot smarter and faster. And there's this sense that Fantasy Flight have sort of looked at the indie RPG scene,
yeah,
tried to come up with something different, but have done this ham-fisted approach to it. And the other side of it is that it's a very much a sandbox kind of, well, what they call an emergent narrative, mm-hmm, now in video games, oh, where it's like, you know, we set up the sandbox with all the toys for you to play in, and you go and pick those up and make your own game. So there's no scenario per se.
Yeah, or win condition.
It's the players as themselves encountering their own loved ones and the important people in their life, and in my case, our own pets.
I was going to say, I was surprised to see you here this week, because I did hear that you'd been savagely eaten by your dog, Trooper,
yes,
on the Brooker Highway.
Trooper the giant greyhound. I know he's listening because he loves me very, very much. It needed more of a spark,
yeah,
more of a story scenario to kind of get it going. I'd like to try and play it again. Mm. But I think part of the problem in this kind of emergent storytelling, and the same is true in video games maybe to a lesser extent, is if you're sitting down to play a game called End of the World Zombie Apocalypse, you know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? And so you can't pretend to be surprised.
No. Yes. And every decision you make is with the full knowledge that you're going to need to get that machete to be able to chop some zombie heads off. You don't do what you would normally do as a rational human being who had just finished, you know, whatever it was in the normal day. Every decision you're making is ramped up to 11.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Interesting, but
not quite.
Yeah.
And I guess in terms of those emergent narratives, some of my video game experience, it's often because you go, well, there's a big blank spot in the map. I wonder what's out there. And you really do have no idea what you're going to come across.
But also, you shouldn't underestimate just how boring it is to actually play as yourself.
Yeah. You know? Speak for yourself, Trent.
An emergent narrative when you're playing The Witcher, yes, or something, yes, on you know, PlayStation, Xbox, what have you, is one thing. But when you're just rolling up a character, you know, that's called Trent or Garth or Mark, it's a little bit more dull. Yeah.
Maybe we should swap characters and get to see what it's like in the other person's
shoes.
See,
now there you go. Now you're talking, right?
Fantasy Flight, they haven't thought out of the box, have they?
What have you been playing lately?
Well, look, here's the thing. I haven't been playing much in the way of board games because, Garth, curse you.
No, it's my fault, is it?
You told me about this amazing video game that I needed to at least take a brief look at.
Yeah. Sounds like something I'd say.
One doesn't just take a brief look at video games. You know that. This War of Mine.
Oh, have you been playing This War of Mine?
I have finally, because I wasn't aware it existed until you started talking about it on this very show,
yep,
when we spoke about the fact that there's a board game version of this coming up soon. And look,
really?
I'm very, very much now, particularly, looking forward to hearing about more of that, because this game is compelling. Mm. I've never been so enthralled with being so depressed before. And, you know, like a carrot and a potato and, God forbid, a bottle of homemade alcohol.
I know.
Has me at the computer for hours.
Yes.
What is it about that game?
So this is this Steam game where you're playing in some kind of post-war ruins. I mean, it could be you know, parts of Syria today, yeah, or there's a feeling that it's a sort of Eastern European.
It does seem sort of like Sarajevo-ish, yeah, almost. And, but you're right. It's in the middle of some sort of, whether it's a civil war, whatever it is, you're in the ruins of a city where you've lived a normal life, and all of a sudden things are no longer normal. You're scrounging to survive. You're scavenging. You've got other people around you who are obviously trying to survive as well. You're all robbing from each other. People are getting killed. The military, they're sort of out of control. And it has the two phases where in the day, you're basically hiding in your house. Sometimes people come and knock on your door and trade with you or ask you to help them with problems. And you basically turn the junk that you find in the night when you're out scavenging into stuff to survive, including food, including medicine, those sort of things.
And the goal of the game is just to survive, and it's a random, like, you've got no idea when the war is actually going to end.
That's right.
Is it going to end?
When the game starts, it's a random number of days.
Yeah, it's a random thing. So I because you were telling me how into it you had recently become, Mark, I thought, oh, I better give this another go. So then I got to about day five and I'd managed to construct a radio. So I listened to the radio and it says, war due to end in 8 days. And I went, I can see through 8 more days. I haven't killed anyone yet, either my own characters or people whose houses I've had to go to. And then I survived my 8 days, and that's when the civil war in the city starts and everything becomes even harder because there are armed gangs going through the streets. So it's really dangerous to go out at night.
And this is becoming a board game.
Yeah.
Well, I can see that because it's all turn-based, and I suppose you'd be collecting cards or icons of some kind.
And look, in fact, it really reminds me a lot of Dead of Winter.
Yeah,
where
right.
you're sort of banding together. And in fact, it would be very interesting to have a hidden trader mechanic in this game because, you know, you're one person controlling however many people you have in your house, but at times you think they're not really pulling together.
Exactly right, because they always turn up wounded or sick and they're taking up resources and not contributing.
So, look, I'm really excited to hear more about the board game version of this. I've been really enjoying it. It's just really different.
Mm, and it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I think it's a wise choice, Mark, especially if you haven't had time to get actual physical games to the table because you'd be able to play it on your non-eye device or your smart TV.
I've been playing it on my Mac, my device.
There you go. That's fantastic.
Called a Mac, my Mac device, yeah. Anyway, look, we're going to come back more and hear all about the latest board game news, and someone is going to build a board gaming room. We might try and give him a few hints.
I know, it's like the block.
Paul Kelly with Uncle Bill, and that was Stories of Me. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Speaking of stories, Trent.
Hey!
Mark told me that would be a good segue. And you've got stories wrapped up as news, sandwiched as an enigma.
In a tortilla.
Yeah. So, news.
You can see why I do the segues, can't you?
The news. In 2015, Kickstarter tabletop board games raised more money than video games for the first time.
Really? Leon contributed to that.
That's right. How much cheddar are we talking about? $144.4 million on Kickstarter board games in 2015, up from just under $89 million the year before.
Wow, that's massive growth.
A big jump.
And that's US dollars, so that's about $1 trillion Australian dollars.
Real money, that's right. Wow. The number of successfully funded board games, in fact, was 4 times that of video games. That's 1,396 successfully funded Kickstarted board games versus 374 video games.
Yeah. Okay.
And this trend still bears out once you account for the success of the god-awful Exploding Kittens. In other words, take that aberration out of the numbers and it still stands up. So what does this mean?
I've got to ask though, do they count those stupid bicycle playing cards where every week someone kickstarts a new version of bicycle playing cards with backs?
Quite probably. They also count miniatures games.
They
all count. They have to.
At least they're a game. Bicycle playing cards. Games. How many versions of playing cards do we need?
But is it indicative of the impending death of the video game industry? Will people soon be hocking their PS4s for copies of Ticket to Ride? I think so.
Do you want a copy of Ticket to Ride for your PS4?
Speaking of Kickstarter, remember how Eagle Griffin Games tried to launch a campaign to reprint Martin Wallace's Brass?
Yes.
Do you remember this one?
Yes, I do.
And then they were told very publicly that they did not have the rights to do so by Martin Wallace?
Yes.
Well, the whole thing erupted late last year and then went a little bit quiet, and a private settlement has come about and produced the following result. And pay attention, boys and girls, because this is where it gets weird.
Okay.
Eagle Griffin have already reprinted Brass Deluxe, and the entire production run has been sold exclusively to games distributors, well, one games distributor in the US and one in the UK. And now Roxley Games has announced their own upcoming new Kickstarter edition.
Right.
Which is not the exact same version that they just bought off Eagle Griffin?
A new print.
A new one.
Oh, really? Okay. Now, if you're confused, that might be because Martin Wallace's settlement deal was moderated by none other than Vital Lacerda.
Oh.
Aha, there we go.
That's wow. calling in the big guns yeah. as far as your game designers yep. go. Now, Vital himself, and this is where it gets even weirder, has announced an update of his winemaking economic brain burner, Vinhos.
Yes.
Now, that's coming out in the third quarter of 2016. All new rules, new reprint, streamlined version. And that's coming from Eagle Griffin Games.
Oh, okay.
Not only is it coming from, it has cometh from them because it is on Kickstarter right now.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
With art by our very own Australian
Tim.
Gun artist, Ian O'Toole, who's done the artwork for one of our faves, Gallerist.
Yep.
And their new...
And also Nemo's War.
Yeah, that's right. He's been a busy boy.
He's doing Vinhos, and he's also doing the other Vital game about rebuilding the city that was volcanoed that you talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Wasn't it about the one in Portugal or somewhere?
It's all in Iberia.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm glad you guys have researched your
news. Yeah, that's right.
You've sprung this on us. But the main thing is, who's going to back Vinhos? Because it's on Kickstarter right now.
Mm.
It looks fantastic, as we would expect. It comes with the original... It's a double-sided board.
Yeah, double-sided board.
So the original board, plus a new board, plus two different styles of rules. One of you got to do it. I did the Gallerist. All right, we'll leave that later.
And how good is the Gallerist, just while we're on the subject of Vital Lacerda? That's just such a great game. And speaking of our favourite designers with unpronounceable names, Ignace Trivicek is releasing a title called First Martians, Adventures on the Red Planet through Portal Games. And this updates the rule set from Robinson Crusoe.
Cool.
Robinson Crusoe in space.
That's exactly right.
Space Family Robinson Crusoe.
You guys played Robinson Crusoe. This is the cooperative game. I think maybe I've won it once. It's a bloody tough game where you're competing. Well, not competing. It's a cooperative game where you're trying to, you know, gather resources and just survive.
Competing with animals and volleyballs not to die.
The various scenarios. The worst thing about the game is the rule book, though, because it's actually quite a simple rule system made diabolically difficult by this translated rule book.
That's true.
I think this is going to be great in a new iteration.
Yeah.
And in this Martian scenario, like The Martian.
Exactly. Again, this is causing a whole lot of waves because it is coming with a companion app, which is going to essentially create the story as you go along. So it's almost going to be procedurally generated in some way, shape, or form.
Interesting.
So it's going to see if it can do the mind meld between the physical and the app in a way that a few games have tried, like The Alchemist and what have you. But
the way XCOM does a bit.
Yeah, but this game has been right up the top of the hotness for a good couple of weeks now since it was announced.
On the 24th of January in Austin, Texas, two thieves broke into Pat's Games and removed three cases of Magic cards, said to be worth $75,000 US.
Wow.
Now, I don't want to endorse this kind of behavior, but I must admit there's a certain amount of sort of fantasy fulfillment in this story when I read it. But it really does take... to actually follow through with that, oh, gee, I wonder what it would be like if I just stole all of these one night. To follow through with that and actually do it is indicative of a certain disassociation from reality, which is probably not that uncommon amongst Magic players. And while we're on the subject of card games worth too much money, Pathfinder.
This is for you, Mark.
Pathfinder Adventures, the card game, comes to iOS and Android on the 29th of March.
Woo! So they say.
Don't do it. Just don't. Mongoose Publishing is releasing an updated Traveller RPG core rulebook. Remember the Traveller RPG from when we were all young? You too can play a space opera game that is nearly 40 years old.
That sounds exciting.
It's another one of those things where it's a property that's just been kept alive by nostalgia, and maybe it should have just died a death.
Yeah.
Mongoose Publishing's making a bit of a habit of this, though. This is also the mob that have resurrected Paranoia, Okay, the RPG.
Yes.
Which was the Kickstarter that I got on board.
Yeah, so. And that Paul Dean was involved.
But I do wonder how these things are going to translate to a new generation. And finally, two big names in gaming have released financial details in recent weeks. Steve Jackson Games, this was big news. Their sales were down $6.6 million in 2015.
Wow.
But that was also a year which saw the company releasing 37% fewer products as they wean themselves off the teat of the Munchkin cash cow.
Look, you know, I've got something to say here.
Oh, yes.
I called this, I think, at PAX 2014.
Yep.
I do remember I did say, I think we've reached peak Munchkin.
That's right. You did.
I think Steve Jackson Games have also acknowledged it. There was just so much Munchkin flooding the market, and it's not going away completely, but they are scaling it back, moving into some new titles.
Well, yeah, as you would have seen in Area 52 recently, there is a whole table of Munchkin. There is a whole table of about a billion different styles of Munchkin there. So, yeah, how do you just keep going?
And Games Workshop has reported sales in December being below expectations. So continuing problems at Games Workshop with Warhammer, etc. So to combat this ongoing decline, they're actually planning a big expansion of stores across the planet, including a brand new Games Workshop flagship store, which will be coming to Sydney later in 2016. That's the news.
Are you expecting lines a la when an Apple store opens?
Oh, mate, it's going to be like bloody Krispy Kreme donuts all over again. People lining up around the blocks.
We've got a little bit more time before we're gone. We'll be back shortly.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's the Dice Men Cometh talking board games and card games. And there are a few things in this world that I hate as much as a Jack Johnson song. And I'd like to thank you, Mark, for reminding me just how much I can't stand that man or his music.
Anyway, now, you're not the only one with some news this week, are you, Trent?
Oh.
Garth, you've got some news for us as well about things that are happening in the toilet world.
Exactly right. And the toilet is going off because you don't know what's coming, guys. So before I get to the big news, let me just do some little news. Suro, The Way of the Path. You know that little dragon game?
Just to be clear, we're not actually talking about toilet news. This is iOS games.
Yeah.
This is board games you can play on your iOS or Android device.
Yes.
Look, Trent, it sounds like you think there are people out there that don't listen to this show regularly.
Just
because you don't listen to it regularly, my friend.
This might be someone's first show. You don't want to give them the wrong impression.
If it is, you might as well switch off now.
By playing a Jack Johnson song.
Anyway, can I do my bit?
For those who came in late, Garth often plays his iOS games on his iDevice while he's in the toilet.
Exactly. So and I Jack get to Johnson play a couple of times a day.
Often makes me feel like I need to go to the toilet.
Anyway, I'm going to start again from my carefully scripted little iOS update. Suro, The Way of the Path, the quaint, petite dragon game where you're just laying cards with a whole bunch of squiggly lines on it. My kids absolutely love this game. It plays 2 to 8 players in 15 minutes, is now available on your iDevice for the measly sum of $5.99, which I've got the game, so that's fine, but $5.99 for a very quaint little game, that's a lot of money.
That sounds a little bit steep.
Is a lot for an app version of such a simple game.
Exactly. It looks fantastic, so I'm sure they put a lot of money into the actual art and the look of it itself, but it's a little bit high. It's $3 if you're in the USA, so again, the exchange rate is not helping us. What also is creating a little bit of a brouhaha is that the multiplayer on this game is not through Game Center that I hear you say. It's through Facebook.
What?
So in order for you to be able to play this with 7 other people in 7 other toilets on 7 other continents, you have to sign into Facebook to play this game.
Do you have to all be friends on Facebook?
I don't think so, but it's not through Game Center. It's all linked into your Facebook logins. I haven't downloaded the game, and I know, Trent, you would probably be the one who'd be least likely to A, play this game, or B, play this game through Facebook. It seems like it's just I don't know, a little bit too much integration for some people.
An extra hurdle that you don't really know.
I won a game. Do I want to share that game with everyone? Yeah. Some people do. I'm sure, I'd imagine a lot of people don't.
It's all interesting, farm though, villas. Because, you know, in the media world, Facebook is increasingly trying to set itself up as a... most people get their... A lot of young people get their news solely through Facebook now. And increasingly it's trying to set itself up as a channel for that delivery and demand exclusive access to content and all that kind of thing. I wonder... if Facebook's actually getting a cut out of that $5.95,
who knows? Yeah.
Because they're saying here's the platform, we'll provide it to you. Give us 20 cents out of every sale.
I guess it would also give them great marketing data to be able to see what advertising they put on your Facebook page and all that. So anyway, this is just sort of the first app that I've actually explicitly noted that it's had that kind of integration. Mm. So I'm sure it won't be the last. Moving on to other things. Board Game Geek over the last several weeks and month or so have been doing their best apps of 2015. They have been doing dribs and drabs every week of various headings, so I thought I'd give you the snapshot of who won what over 2015. Starting with the recommended old games, which wasn't actually a list of who came first, second or third or whatever. It was just, here are some good games you should try. They had Talisman on there, which...
Really?
Yeah, which I'm disappointed in.
Really?
They then had Hearthstone. Now, Hearthstone is mammoth and fantastic and a lot of fun if you want your little two-player card-driven fighting game. Then Galaxy Trucker, which was App of the Year for a lot of people and is a fantastic implementation of a brilliant board game. You then had 80 Days, which is essentially going around the world, sort of doing the Carmen Sandiego and that style of thing. It's a little... point-and-click, choose-your-own-adventure, race-style game where you're just trying to make your way around the world and beat your competitors. So they were the ones that they recommended that you just go out and try, so that was nice of them. But then they had some actual headings. Now, the first one that was talked about was the best interactive story or RPG app that came out. Mm-hmm. Now, the second place one, because there was only two, was To Be or Not To Be, which was an Hamlet RPG where you got to basically do a choose-your-own-Hamlet movie. Now, it looks pretty cool. It's got interesting graphics and, a couple of bucks, so it's probably worthwhile if you're interested. But the one that came number one was Sorcery! !3, which is based on Steve Jackson's 1980s RPG setting in Backlands. So you get to go through the wilds of Backlands. And it is, not quite 40 years old, but a 30-year-old RPG version.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with Backlands.
Yeah, no.
at all. I thought I knew Steve Jackson.
Well, remember, there are two.
Oh, true.
Yes. Okay,
in your house, Trent, Backlands is a very scary, hairy place.
So anyway, this is a choose-your-own-adventure storytelling fantasy RPG. Okay? So that was the number one. And again, just a couple of bucks. So if you're into it, go for it. Then they had the biggest surprise. So the apps that they were just expecting to be average and they weren't. Yes. And again, out of the two that they suggested, Coo was number two. Ooh. Yes. So even though I've put up with months and months and months of ridicule because I've been doing and playing Coo on the loo without you.
While you're doing...
Exactly. It came number two. And the only reason it didn't come number one is because of the Seven Wonders app. And the biggest surprise was that it didn't come out. Because it's been in beta for about 7 or 8 months now.
Yes.
And the fact that it has been talked about and shown for around a year and a half to 2 years, the fact that this game has not been released is incredibly surprising, which is why it won that particular award.
I just hate this whole thing of releasing games in beta, really.
Yeah.
I get that games take a long time nowadays and really do require a big investment of cash and time, but oh my God, can't we just get the money, up front?
They're just getting free playtesting, really,
they haven't got enough money to actually finish the game, so they've got to start selling it before it's finished.
Yeah. I'm sure they've got a bit of money. Seven Wonders did all right. Anyway, I'll just go straight to the games of the year so that we can start talking about something else after a song. Number five, Splendor, which I thought was a really good implementation of a really, really good game. It plays quick. It doesn't have all that clunky setup and breakdown at the end. You can play it with real people, pretend people, no people at all. It has challenges where you can... Basically, it alters the gameplay a little bit where you need to try and sort of, I guess, hit certain benchmarks along the way. It's not just about winning points. Number four was Sorcery 3, the one that I just talked about of Steve Jackson. Number three was Coup. Number two is Xenoshift, which is a deck-building alien-style game, which I've talked about a little bit.
Yes.
And then number one was Card Crawl, which is a card-driven dungeon crawl-style game.
Mm.
Just good for 10, 15 minutes here or there. Really cool little art style. Yeah, well worth it, and obviously has a lot of awards. So they're the ones that Board Game Geek think were the best of 2015.
Fantastic. We'll be back shortly with more.
Hypnotized by the White Stripes, you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. We're talking board games, card games, but we're not actually. And Trent, we're not going to talk about your renovations because I don't think they're going to happen in a week. So we'll probably be able to talk about them later.
That much is true, yes.
And looking at the clock, we're going to run out of time. So let's talk about something that's quite important, which is the current situation with MilSims.
That's right, the death of arguably Australia's most popular online board game retailer.
Well, at least maybe most well-known, although it's been, I don't know, from all the talk on the world of the internet, it's been on the decline for a while. But I know certainly for me, getting started back in the hobby 2005, 2006, 2007, I regularly ordered things from MilSims in Melbourne. I'm sure you would have, Trent. And I also remember...
And made the pilgrimage out to Bentley.
That's right, we did.
You know, whenever we go over there for PAX or,
exactly,
or whatever. So, but this has been a bit of a long time coming because from what I understand, people have been complaining online about delays in orders and that kind of thing, and now the store has actually just closed its doors.
Yeah. And look, it's very hard to find facts about this because there's a lot of, you know, there are threads on Reddit, there are threads on Board Game Geek, there's discussions on the Facebook page, but there's not a lot of facts around. So I guess we should certainly state up front.
So we don't know what's
going
on.
We don't know what's going on at all.
Yeah.
Apart from what we've read on the internet. So, hey, that could mean anything.
Yeah.
But certainly I've seen something along the lines of that ownership changed maybe about 18 months ago, and that was really a start of the decline. Because I can certainly remember dealing with Colin, I think, who was one of the original owners at MilSims. Even when we had our first Hobart Winter Games Fest, we've just had the fifth one last year, we contacted him to see if he'd like to provide a game as a door prize or a raffle or something, and he did. He's a Melbourne game store. We're in Hobart, but because of the traffic that he got from Hobart and from the Hobart Game Society, you know, he was happy to send us a game. And I know I was always impressed by their customer service, but I must admit I hadn't bought many things from them in the last sort of 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, well, I guess my experience is different because I've only really been into the hobby for the last 2 or 3 years.
Mm.
Personally, I've been a board gamer for a long time, and Trent, I'd have to thank you for introducing me to the world of board games, specifically when we moved down to Tassie all those years ago. My experience has been I've ordered and waited.
Yes.
And waited some more, and my personal record is Arctic Scavengers, which took 18 months to order. Now, that I'm not saying is explicitly a fault of MilSims because they did go from the original version to a new version, so I'd certainly put some of that on the publisher, but that's a long time.
Yeah, and this is because they'll start selling games before they've actually got them from the distributor. So these are advanced orders you're talking about, which are out of their control.
Mm.
Okay, but having said that, they are still taking people's money for these games.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, probably the key point is their communication around the delay on these things.
Or lack thereof.
Exactly. They have been notorious for their lack of communication, updating people, oh, this is delayed, this is taking a bit longer. Because we all know that, you know, both in the Kickstarter world and the non-Kickstarter world, things get delayed. These things do take a lot of time.
Well, I just want to say that this is just like, you know, life imitating Kickstarter. I mean, really, you hand over your money and then just nothing happens. This is retail has become like Kickstarter.
And I guess it's an unfortunate nature of us being so far away from where the action happens and such a small community on a when you compare it to Europe and North America particularly, trying to get games out here when publishers understandably want to push them out to their big markets in Europe and North America. I can get why, as an industry, we're not as important, but that's where we rely on our bricks and mortar stores to provide that level of customer service to be transparent and at least be honest.
So probably the big news, for those who don't know, is just recently, I think this is right at the end of December, an insolvency notice came out where a meeting was called to appoint liquidators to get rid of everything and basically pay back whatever debtors there are.
Yep.
Now, unfortunately, I know there are a lot of people out there who have the aforementioned pre-orders where they've paid their money and it hasn't been, they're not going to see their games, they're not going to see their money.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the Milsoms website has been down for weeks and weeks and weeks. Yeah. Now, the great thing is, because I have pre-orders with them, I said, yes, I'll take a copy of Glory to Rome. Even the publisher has no idea either. I'll do that. But I'm not concerned because all my experience so far has been they've only charged my credit card when the actual item has shipped. So you are able to do orders through PayPal, and you are also able to go to PayPal and say, my order is not being fulfilled, and submit a claim request to be able to get money back from that. But there are a lot of people on BoardGameGeek and Facebook threads who are understandably really concerned about where their money is.
Yeah, and there's also, a greater concern about what was an icon of Australian board gaming history and community going under, and we know what's caused that.
I don't know about community, mate, because look, really, the one thing that Milsims has been famous for more than anything else is price. Okay, Milsims has always guaranteed to have the lowest price out of anyone.
Yeah.
Okay, and everybody's always said, how is it that Milsims can offer such low, low prices? Yeah. Well, the answer is, it turns out they can't. And if you ask me, the writing was on the wall when these guys moved out to Boronia from Bentley.
And I do remember
now,
your
rant. Anybody knows the suburb of Boronia in the outer east of Melbourne, you're going to know that is Shitsville. right, that is the end of the friggin' earth. And if it's not, you can smell it from there. And it is not surprising to me that any business that makes the decision to move to Boronia, of all places, has gone belly up within a year of making that decision. You brought it on yourself, Milsims.
Wow. You having a stroke? Are you okay?
Look, it's Radio Gold here with the Dice Men Cometh. We have come to the end of our brief time in the studios together. Trent, I'd like to say it's been lovely to have you back with us, but
then you played a Jack Johnson song.
There you go. Look, it's been good to have you back and give us a taste of what things used to be like back in the world where we didn't know what we were doing. Garth, thank you again for being so professional.
Oh, as always. And look, I just want to say quickly, thank you to everyone who's liked our page in the last 24 hours, of which there are about 50 new likes. So that's fantastic. We have screamed past 500. We are at 540 or something now, which is awesome, man.
Absolutely.
Onwards and upwards. And again, thank you to everyone who was lucky enough to win one of our 12 games on being so quick, giving their addresses and what have you. Those games are in the post and on their way now. It's great.
And we'll be back next week with more. Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.